at Dolphin Theatre. Pick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you by Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight, we are chatting all things comedy, so pour yourself a wine or a water and get ready for a fun show. To kick off the show, as it was Anzac Day on Friday, we thought we'd start off with a beautiful new waiata honouring the legacy of the 28th Māori Battalion and marking the recent passing of the last surviving member, Sir Bom Gillies. Here is He Aha, Te Aha.
If I'd known as much as I know now, I would have stayed home.
Mō te atu a te kini me te whenua. He karanga o koutou mātua. Haere ana koutou mā. We tested through time by shadows and light. There are we stand undefeated. Mama, do we stand on our own? Mama, on the land of the people, our home, our home, our home.
Beautiful waiata to start the show celebrating Anzac Day on Friday. Have you had a fabulous long weekend, Emma?
Sorry, we're going to get the giggles now. I think we should tell people that we've swapped seats and that I'm in the hot seat and
yeah.
I'm trying to run the desk whilst trying to talk, whilst trying to push the right buttons. And as you said, you didn't check whether the end of that song had an outro and it went straight to an ad.
So Emma and I have swapped seats because next week's my last episode on Kick Arts. After 5 years, I'm taking a break to go and
direct. Hey, that made it sound like you were going all together.
I'm coming back.
Thank you.
Coming back in September.
Yes.
So a big break because I'm directing a show out of Auckland, which is taking me away on Sundays. So, yeah, Emma's learning the hot seat tonight. What could possibly go wrong?
And I've watched for 5 years going, oh, that looks so easy. But anyway, we've got a man with a hot coloured shirt. I don't know if it's a hot coloured shirt. He didn't tell me what colour. A bright coloured shirt on the line who wants to talk to us about something to do with a rectangle with six sides and numbers on it.
Okay, well, you better press the button so we can hear him. And welcome to the show, Stephen Lyons.
Kia ora. How are we all doing?
We are good, thank you. We are good. What is happening in your world?
I mean, I'm kind of thrown for a loop by the fact that you brought me on and then you threw the twist of you have a show coming up. But I imagine we'll find out more about that later.
You will. And it's certainly not a comedy, not like yours.
Oh, so yes, I'm here because I'm so grateful to be back. Yes, I have an overly bright shirt that you can, I just posted it to Instagram if you're worried.
James and Dunedin will be checking.
And yeah, I'm here promoting the Dice Show, which I'm so excited is going to be back literally for one night only in the New Zealand Comedy Fest.
We've got one of your cast members in the studio tonight.
You do. You have Bridget Davies in tonight.
We do.
And we haven't even introduced her yet.
No.
I know. Spoiler alert. It's Bridget's first time doing the Dice Show with us, which is so exciting. We have returning cast members, Tina Gonzalez, Sam Smith, David Stewart, and Summer Jay, as well as me, because, I like doing it.
That is awesome.
And are you using your big blow up dices this time?
Yeah, so we're improvising stand-up. It's part improvised stand-up, part panel show, and part podcast. And it's a chance to just have fun and kind of humorously explore both how hard stand-up is and how joyous comedy is.
Sounds like fun.
So for someone who hasn't come to the Dice Show before, explain as an audience member, what are they in for? How does the dice come in?
Yeah, so we have six comedians and we each take turns. We get to roll a giant inflatable dice. Everyone gets to chant, roll that dice, lightning sound effect. And then whatever number comes up, that's how many minutes of stand-up you have to perform.
Ooh.
Off of your head, like from your tummy, from your heart, and out of the mouth. And I love the show because it means we're all there. Everyone's on stage, like the whole cast is on stage for the whole show. We do it, then we hang out and chat, which is the podcast kind of area.
Nice.
And we kind of go back and forth, and it's about getting to know kind of your new favorite comedians. Because by the end of the, like normally when you go and see a lineup show, you might get 10, 15, or 20 minutes with someone. This way, we all get to hang out. So by the end of the show, you are going to go, ooh, what is their show in the festival? How do I get tickets? Because you're going to have so much fun.
Can I ask, Bridget, have you done this show before?
I haven't. I actually haven't gone to one either, so I'm learning alongside you.
All right. So we're prepping you. You're going to have a little bit of, the edge on the other comedians.
Well, they've done it before, so they're all really going to be excellent. This is me doing research here.
Okay. Stephen, what's been one of the hardest when you've rolled a five or a six-minuter? What have they had to talk about? What's been one of the hardest ones you've seen?
Well, the biggest thing is that the subject doesn't really matter because as soon as the timer starts, the subject is just your jumping off point. I mean, last year we had someone have to do 6 minutes on spices.
Brilliant.
Yeah. We actually had Tina Gonzalez did our April Fool's show a couple of years ago where if anyone rolled a one, they had to roll a 20-sided dice. And yes, it was also huge.
Love it.
Oh, my goodness. If you could see Bridget's face right now, she's freaking out.
We're not doing that. Don't worry about that.
No,
that
is not going to
happen. Tina did 14 minutes of improvised stand up on gender fuckery.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was very, I mean, it is the thing is, we're all here together. Like, we're discovering this. No one is expecting you to just step up to the mic and deliver, like, the most perfect stand up. The joy is getting to watch people's brains process and the amount of times comedians surprise themselves in really delightful ways is, I think, one of the reasons I keep bringing the show back.
Fantastic.
So tell us, where are people coming to watch this show?
I'm very excited. It is our first time doing it in the basement main theater. We are on Saturday, the 3rd of April, so it is this coming weekend.
Let's go with May.
Oh, May, thank you. Is it April now? All right, good. Yes. Oh, my God, I've missed it by 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great show. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's the 3rd of May. It's 9 o'clock at the basement. It's going to be a party vibe. It's going to be chaotic. We've got Bridget, we're going to take care of you. Don't worry. It's going to get silly and weird.
And I hope you've warned all you comedians, because that roof is so low in that basement space, not to throw that dice too high.
We do have to submit a hazard warning to the festival, and I was like, is a giant inflatable dice a hazard?
Love it.
Depends where you pop it. Now, Stephen, last time we checked in with you, there'd been a lot of change in the media landscape, and a lot of your shows that you were warming up had disappeared. How's life treating you this year? Have things got back on track for you?
Not even remotely.
So
obviously the changes keep happening, and with stuff going on globally, there's even more weird stuff going on. But I've been very lucky. I've been working as a graphic designer a little bit, and then also writing for shows. I think as many in the entertainment industry would probably attest to, it's tough out there. Yeah, but we also are really lucky that we have May, and we have this chance for all of the comedians to kind of get together, support each other's shows, and get excited. Because I think right now a lot of people need a laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our whole show tonight is dedicated to comedy and the comedy festival, so get in behind all our artists tonight and support them. Where can they head, Stephen, to get those tickets?
Oh, head to the Comedy Festival, comedyfestival.co.nz. Type in the Dice Show and you'll find it. There are so many great shows on. And one of the great cheat sheets for the Dice Show is you can come and see a bunch of people who have shows in the festival. Mm-hmm. And they're not using any of their material. Yeah. So you'd be like, oh, I had a great time with Bridget. I can't wait to find out more about their show.
Fantastic. Awesome. Thanks for joining us once again, Stephen. Go and have a fabulous Sunday night, and all the best with the Dice Show.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your break, and I look forward to finding out what you're cooking up.
Sounds good, mate. Take care.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. See you, mate.
Stay.
It always sounds like so much fun, but I've never actually gotten along to one of his shows.
Yeah, I have, and it was so enjoyable, although I must admit when they roll the really long one, you are starting to I want another quick one. I actually found the 1 and 2 minute ones hilarious, because people are trying to cram so much into a minute.
Yeah.
They were funnier for the audience, personally, but yeah, it's such a good night out. And he does all his comedians come out and talk to all the guests in the audience. It's a very chilled vibe. It's really awesome.
So should we introduce our two comedians properly now?
We should.
In the studio with us.
We have.
Are you pointing to me? Am I doing? I didn't know whether you were or I was. But anyway, we've got Bridget, who, as you've heard, is in the Dice Show, but has also got their own show. It's quite a long title, actually, isn't it? Yeah, Not Too Bad, Thanks. How are you? So how are you?
Yeah, Not Too Bad, Thanks. How about you?
So is that where the title came from?
Genuinely, it came from, I realised that every time I'm at work, every time a colleague says, how are you, that is what I say. And so it's basically me trying to train myself out of that being my response to every person who asks how I am. So it's really nothing to do with the show and all about changing my behaviour.
Lovely. And then joining you in studio is Michelle, whose show has got a slightly shorter name, is who she says she is.
Yes. It's meant to be said, like, Michelle Wiley is who she says she is.
Oh.
Yeah. I know, title.
Let's find out tonight if that's true. Dun, dun, dun.
Are you who you say you are?
No, I'm not. I use a stage name. It's hilarious to me. That's not even my actual name, so.
Is it not?
No.
I've known you for years.
I know.
It's all coming out.
Every time a comedian finds out that that's not my last name, I grow another pair of wings.
Yeah, yeah. Do I get to find out your real name tonight, or do I ask you afterwards?
Yeah, we're gonna go after.
Okay, cool.
Oh wow. Interesting.
Love it. So
it's a hidden second life going on there.
Some mystique.
Ooh.
New Zealand is too small.
Fair enough. So first of all, tell us, what are your shows all about? Michelle, kick it off. What can audiences expect?
Well, my show is about all of the times I've been mistaken for someone else who's not me. So that's basically, it's me saying, I am who I say I am, I promise. I've had it described to me, my comedy is dumb jokes for smart people. So, and I think that's a really nice phrase, right? Yeah. I think that that's exactly who I am. I'm like a little bit cheeky, a little bit intellectual, but very accessible to everybody. So that's what my comedy is. Yeah.
Nice. And I mean, it's good that you know who your comedy is for, right?
Yeah. But also, I love a crowd that isn't mine. I love to get them on board. You know, when you make it someone laugh who you don't think you can, it's a really good feeling.
Very cool. All right. And tell us, what is your... Well, you've kind of told us what your show is about. It's about changing your behaviours.
Well, that's what the title's about. The show is... It was originally going to be called Pushing 30, and it was going to be all age and stage stuff. And then I changed the title for the reasons I've said, but it's basically kept the same content. So it's getting older, it's my first job post-uni, first time living with a partner, and it's songs as well. It's my first time doing solo musical comedy, and I'm doing 3 songs.
How fantastic. Yeah. Playing for yourself, or backing tracks, or live musician?
Keyboard,
or?
Yeah.
Keyboard?
Mm-hmm.
How fun.
Okay. So what got you both first into comedy? Michelle, take us back. Where did comedy start for you?
I have the worst story to get into comedy, and it is that one of my friends told me I should do stand-up. And the reason that's the worst story ever is that so many people have friends who are like, you're so funny, you should do stand-up, and you shouldn't believe your friends.
Yes.
Oh, my friends never said that. Good job. It's a great story.
Yeah. So someone had just... He knew a comedian, and he was like, that sounds like something Michelle would like to do. And then because I am a bit academic, I then read every single book I could find on stand-up comedy, which is not that many.
I did the same thing.
My gosh.
So I decided I wanted to do comedy when I was still at school, so I spent my whole year 13 reading autobiographies of comedians.
That's hilarious. Which one was your favourite?
Comedian or autobiography?
Autobiography.
Do you know what? Kevin Bridges' autobiography was so good. And he was like 23 at the time he wrote it. Like, I don't think you should have a great autobiography at 23.
He got a bit of living to do, yeah.
And it was a thick book, and it was really well written. It was, yeah.
It would be so tough if your autobiography did peak at 23.
Yeah. If he never writes another one.
Kevin. That was life.
Yeah.
And when was your first sort of moment, I guess, on stage or performing to a bigger group than, say, just family and friends?
Oh, I never performed. I didn't let my friends come see me for the first year and a half.
Really?
Yeah, because if you don't make strangers laugh, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
If you don't make your friends laugh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't let them come see me for a while, but only very recently have my parents seen me on stage for the first time. And it was very interesting. I didn't really censor myself that much, but more than fewer swear words than I usually say on stage.
Was it more of an awareness? You just could see them and knew they were there, or did you purposely put them in the back row?
No, they were very present. I told the MC that my parents were there for the first time, and he mentioned them, and every single comedian afterwards also mentioned them. And it was very funny to me and not so funny to them.
Oh,
that
no.
It was delightful, yeah. How did you get into stand-up?
I started watching it first, not even in New Zealand, on TV. I started watching Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow on UK TV, and then he came to New Zealand in, I don't remember what year it was, but I was in year 12. My mum took me, and then she got me his DVDs, and I just got really into watching it. And one day I was watching him walk out on stage, and everyone was clapping, and I was like, that'd be a nice feeling to be welcomed like that. I want to do that. But I wanted to wait until I'd finished school so I didn't have to tell anyone that I was doing it. So I spent year 13 writing jokes, and then as I was graduating, my mum was like, cool, now you can go to uni. And I was like, yes, as I was emailing Scott at the Classic to get a comedy spot, and told her that I was spending the night at a friend's house. And then she picked me up the next day and was like, how was Kelly? And I was like, oh, Kelly was good. She just went to work. She's like, oh, why did you go to her house if she was working? And I was like, I walked up Queen Street and did stand-up comedy. And she's like, you walked up Queen Street alone.
Don't worry about the comedy. You were in Queen Street. Yeah, every parent's nightmare.
Yes. No, she was worried about the walking up the road. So, yeah, and that was my first gig, and haven't looked back. 10 years ago now.
Still walking up Queen Street.
Still walking up Queen Street alone.
And is Michael McIntyre someone that you still watch and follow?
No, my favourite ones to watch now are Sarah Millican and Joe Lycett from the UK now. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And Taskmaster.
Oh, gosh, I love Taskmaster. My dream is to be on New Zealand Taskmaster.
I was just going to say, is that like a goal to be on Taskmaster as a comedian?
It is a goal, but my stretch goal here is I want to be the first one on two series. I want to be the first one on two countries version of Taskmaster.
Cool.
I know it's not going to happen, but that's why it's a stretch goal.
Hey, you got a dream thing. Mm. Yeah.
Cool.
And I suppose for so many comedians, it is kind of, it just takes you out of just being in a theatre as such and being on national TV. It's but like 7 days as well, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been on 7 days heaps, though.
Yeah, I did my third one a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So getting into that more, which is awesome. Very scary.
I got to do these baby steps yet. I'm still working.
So who's your kind of person that, like, we've had...
Almost inspiration.
Inspiration, yeah.
I love this question because I always answer a comedian that no one knows, and his name is Gary Gulman. He's from the States, and he did a set on Conan, a 6-minute TV spot that is talked about as being the tightest 6-minute set in TV history. And it is, it's on YouTube. You should look it up. It's called State Abbreviations. And he is just like, you listen to him and it's poetry as well as comedy. Like, he makes you laugh, but it's also beautiful to listen to. So that's kind of where I want to get to.
Mm.
Like, I would love for people to like want to listen to my jokes over and over.
Do you think being a comedian is kind of like being on a TV sitcom? Like, do you walk down the street and people go, 7 days?
Oh, not yet. But if that does happen, I plan on telling them that I'm a real estate agent and they recognize me from my billboard. That's my dream.
I love that you've worked it out. You've thought about this.
I'm egotistical enough to think about when I get recognized, but something else enough to deny it completely and say I've got a different job.
I gotta say, you look nothing like a real estate agent. Yeah.
What does a real estate agent look like?
I don't know. From the North Shore.
I love it. I was getting my nails done the other day and I heard a very distinct comedian's voice. South African female. And really distinct. And she was round the corner having her hair done. And I was like, I said to my nail technician, is that Ursula Carson? And they were like, yes, it is. And I was like, she's having her hair done in the same salon that I get my nails done. I was like, this is quite cool. It kind of made me go, ooh.
People too.
Yeah. Normal people. They do normal things. Yeah. But I suppose you still have to have your hair done, right?
Yeah. I have a new hairdresser and she had seen me at a gig beforehand.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So when you walked in, was she kind of like,
no, we made the connection during the appointment, yeah. So it was more of a, oh, I remember that thing. And I also, like, made a joke at her expense, so. I was like, sorry, have some money, I guess.
Yeah. I'll get up to you, yeah. Promise.
Love it.
Shall we take a music break? And then after the music break, I'm going to quiz you more about your material side of things. So how do you actually sort of gather that material together and, I guess, make it your own? And where do you source it from? But first, time for a music break. What have we got, Miss Bishop?
So Molly Devine, a heartbreak disco anthem for dancing your way into the better day. Her Molly Devine's Good Vibes Only blends retro disco, modern funk, pop soul energy, and a pretty empowering story inspired by a neon mirror from Bunnings. Now that sounds interesting. It's got a fantastic music video which has been released with a certain daughter of a certain man sitting next to me right now. Friend of the show taking on the choreography for the video, and Molly is tuning into Kickouts tonight. Hi Molly, and here is Good Vibes Only. Hopefully if I push the right buttons.
Volume up.
I'm gonna imagine how you touched it. I couldn't remember how you said it felt so good at the time. I couldn't wonder why you need more. I couldn't wonder what she's giving that I ain't got. But this time, don't come over, don't come over. Love needs motion and let it go, yeah. Don't come over, don't come over. Oh, no, 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 no.
Molly Devine. Jump on YouTube and subscribe to her channel and follow her other music. And Molly's listening into the show, and Emma would quite like the elephant, Molly.
Yeah, I think the elephant's really cute, especially with its little sparkles around its neck at the end there.
Great music video. Well done, Keith Patterson and team. Jump online, take a look. Now back to our fabulous guests in the studio from the Comedy Festival, Michelle and Bridget. I'm curious now on your, I guess, what you use as your inspiration. You've talked a little bit about sort of your own journeys, but take away just this show, anytime you're doing comedy, are you always looking for those moments? Do you go away like from tonight and write strange characters in radio studio, one with pink hair? And, you know, do you go away and you list things that you meet in your day, or how does it work?
I'm trying to get into more of a habit of keeping track of things. So I had a friend who said to me a couple of weeks ago, she's like, when you make your friends laugh, write it down. Because you say funny things and then you forget about it, and then you sit down to write and you're like, I can't think of anything funny, because you're trying to force it. So I'm trying to get into more of a habit of keeping track of, like, a note on my phone of like, oh, this was funny or this was funny. And sometimes you go back to it and you're like, that was just for my friend's ears. But another time it might be a really, really good joke. But yeah, most of my stuff comes from things I've done or thought or like had happen, like, you know, moving in with my partner or I went to a stylist to get my colours done, and she calls herself a stylist, but I call her a very mean lady. so just funny experiences as well that
tell you your colours were like Caritani yellow or...
Oh, she did tell me I can't wear black, which is devastating. but it was more she was going to tell me the shapes of clothing I should wear to, like, flatter, like, my body shape I think she was coming from not a body positivity angle and more of an angle of this is what's wrong and this is how you cover it up. And I was like, I paid money for this. I felt very silly for that. So, yeah, trying to turn those kinds of things into comedy as well is a therapy for me for free.
Nice. Michelle, what do you do?
I think I'm very similar. I got into a good habit when I started writing, which was I do 10 bad jokes a day, which is basically like I look up the news and I try and write 10 bad jokes. Like they don't have to be bad jokes, but they are, the purpose of them is to write jokes every day. But it's definitely the conflict. Like when you feel a conflict in your life and you're like trying to figure out why it's conflict, I'm always thinking about how to make that funny, I think. A lot of my story is very personal as well, but and then also I have a lot of opinions on a lot of things. But it's so easy when you try and write an opinion as a joke to come across as really preachy. So that's when you try and bring in that personal aspect and you're like, try and make it about yourself or like, you know, a bit self-deprecating or something silly that's happened to you regarding that. So that's how I do it, I think. But also, yeah, like, when you're with your friends and you say something hilarious or they say something hilarious, like, oh, people love to be like, oh, you should write up a joke about that.
You should put that in your show.
That'll be a good bit for your show. I love it. I recently, I have a friend who has a 9-year-old son who I have bonded with because we both play Pokemon on the Switch, and she, for some reason, is just desperate for me to write a joke about my new friendship with this 9-year-old boy. And aww. I was like, when you can make that not weird, I will do that.
Yeah. Yes, you must have some limitations.
Yeah.
Do you prefer stand-up to improv? Like, you were talking about the Dice Show coming up. You know, is there a preference to stand-up where you feel, I guess, a bit more prepared than the improv? Or do you both like a bit of both?
I don't know if it's a preference. I just haven't done... I've done one improv experience before, and that was on another show that Stephen was getting going, another panel show. So Dice Show will be my second time doing improv.
Okay,
so,
all right, so we'll ask you that in the future. Are you still doing improv?
No preference, or was it just that one and done?
Does it feel, because you're a comedian, though, that if you're doing improv, you've got to be funny?
Yeah.
Like, does that put a pressure on you to actually, you know, oh, they're comedians, they're going to be funny?
Oh, I feel that at work. Like, I've been at the end of a work meeting and people have been like, Bridget, close the meeting, say something funny. Yeah, put that on stage and it's 10 times worse. And everyone's like very lovely and it's like, it's improv, they know it's improv, so it doesn't have to be funny. Like, everyone's super reassuring, but I do think the expectation is still in my head.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
I think I have done the Dice Show once. I got 4 minutes on sleep and I wish I had just gone to sleep for 4 minutes. I think that would have been funnier than what I did say. I loved it because of the collaboration aspect, which you don't get as much as in stand-up. It's a very individual process, often when you're writing by yourself and you're writing your own material, and then you have to test it yourself and put yourself in that space of failure constantly. It can be very lonely, but at the same time, New Zealand is such a good, wholesome stand-up community scene, I think. We do a really good job at hanging out with each other and building each other up for the most part. There's always, you know, competition, so there's that aspect too. But improv seems to be, obviously, with that yes and stuff, it's just like the friendships are on stage as well. It's really nice.
Am I right in saying that quite often comedy, stand-up comedy, does feel very self-deprecating though? Like, you're making fun, quite often you are making fun of yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, so I had a conversation recently with Stephen yesterday about this, which we were talking about the way that New Zealand audiences respond to comedy and whether you can be, there's sort of high status comedians who are the ones who win on stage, and there are the low status comedians who are the ones who constantly have to sort of fall over their own feet. And New Zealand audiences tend to respond better to the low status stuff because of tall poppy syndrome, etc. And often when New Zealand comedians go overseas, you can see them sort of like sit up and their shoulders go back, and they take on a bit more of that high status thing, which is really interesting. And I'm not sure, because it's also interesting with me and Bridget, because I'm not sure, like, maybe you a bit more, but I'm not sure that I fit into a low status, like, like seen, like I come across as a teacher, basically. That's that, like, people believe me when I lie on stage, right, which is delightful. Oh, I love to play with that. But there are comedians who try to lie on stage, try to create something, and audiences will just be like, no, no, you're lying, because of who you are and how you come across. So it's really, it's really interesting.
And it says a lot about New Zealanders.
Oh, yes.
And itself. Yeah. Like, why, like you said, tall poppy syndrome, why are we okay with laughing at people's failure?
I think there's a balance to it as well. There's the other side to it, which is if you're too self-deprecating, New Zealanders are so nice. They're like, aww.
Yes.
And they don't laugh. Mm. You're like, please laugh. Like, I'm trying to be funny.
Because they're feeling they should be supportive
of
you.
Yeah. And they're trying to be like, no, you're all good. I actually had an experience of doing like a lot of self-deprecating jokes in the audience. They started off laughing, and then over time they start going, oh, no, I wanted to reassure them. So I was like, don't worry, I know I'm awesome. And they're like, ugh. And I was like, oh, I just got whiplash. How did you do that?
Well, I think it's the same too, because of the way that society is too. I think of stand-up comedy, say 20 years ago, where it was probably a lot of things that were probably now seen maybe as racially or genderist or inappropriate, you know. And comedy in the past, it used to be very
totally
like man on female, but, you know, kind of comments and things like that, which just wouldn't sit now.
But you go back, I mean, 20 years ago, you and I ran a theatre restaurant and we spent every night abusing each other and people thought it was hilarious. A lot of what we did then wouldn't work now.
Well, I think that's a situation.
I'd be hung up at the door on my way out.
It's an interesting dynamic because of the way that we are feeling like we are changing as a society. But I think that there's a comedian in the States called Anthony Jeselnik, and he does a lot of dark material. And his point that he makes is that art is getting away with it. So if you can get away with it, if you can make people laugh more than they worry about what you're saying, then that's getting away with it, and that's art. You're creating something that there is this involuntary thing that is happening in someone. They are laughing more than this other thing that they are worried about societally. Although this is not to defend any racist, sexist, homophobic material. That there are audiences who let you know that you're not getting away with that now. So.
What are you looking forward to most with the festival coming up?
The international acts.
Oh, yeah.
I love when they come over. Yeah.
Yeah. I am... You know what actually is going to happen in overall international acts, and I am excited to see... We were talking about Angela Dravid's show before as well.
She's not international. She's national.
No, she's a national one. So international and Angela. And then... I feel very... All I can think about is my show at the moment, but what I'm quite excited for is... I've recently been diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and I am going to talk about that in my show, and I haven't told a lot of people that. So it feels like a very dramatic
breaking news.
This is live radio.
I haven't told anyone at work that I'm doing it. I'm going to feel like I'm going to leave my show and go to work, and it's going to be a whole different experience.
Interesting.
That's so cool.
That's cool.
See what happens there.
Okay. Way to come out in a live performance,
yeah,
eh?
I love that.
Yeah.
How exciting.
See what happens. Yeah, first time singing and first time doing that, so see what happens.
What are the firsts can we, like, top up your show with?
I feel like there's enough.
Do you want to juggle as well?
Fire breathing.
I actually had a thought the other day of juggling, and I don't know what prompted it, but that's funny you say that, because, I was visiting my parents on the weekend, and I looked at my old juggling balls, and I was like, I could juggle.
I love that I just picked something that you actually
did.
Yeah, no,
I don't think I'll do that. But you never know. They have to come to the show to find out.
All right, Michelle, give us the plug for your show now. When is it on? Where can people get tickets? All that important stuff.
Very good. It's on the last week of the Comedy Fest show, so very good for people who do things last minute. It is at 6:45 on the 20th to the 24th of May at the Classic Studio. It's called Michelle Wiley Is Who She Says She Is. You can find tickets on Event Finder and comedyfestival.co.nz and comedy.co.nz. And
if people want to follow you, find you, track you for other things that are listening around the country tonight?
Instagram is mish.wiley, at mish.wiley, and that's the main one. To be honest, just follow me there. That's all good. but it's a perfect time, I think, for after, like a quick early dinner and a drink, and then come to a show afterwards. 6:45 is such a good time for me. That is when my comedy is best. I'm so happy.
I love it. And Bridget, how can people track down all your info?
So my show is at Q Theatre Vault. And it's in week two, so it's the 13th, 14th and 17th of May, and it's at 6 p.m. So we can all be home by 9 and have a nice early night. Instagram is probably my main place to find me. So Bridget Davies Comedy, and tickets are from, like, there's a link on my Instagram page or qtheatre.co.nz or the Comedy Festival website. Plenty of places.
Fantastic. All our guests tonight, you can track them down at comedyfestival.co.nz. Michelle and Bridget, all the best for your shows and seasons. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks.
Come
Thank
back
you.
And talk anytime you've got something new up and anywhere in the country.
Delightful.
And we'd love to hear how the dice show goes.
Cool. Thank you.
Good luck. Hope you don't roll too many sixes.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Now we're going to play out while we swap over in the booth here. So this is Jeff On, one of our regular Kick Arts people, who has released a new song called Diverging Lines.
Feel the winter passing. Your birthday just came out of it. I know I should have called when your name came crashing through my brain. Draft another message. My thoughts and the letters collide. Digital glow of the screen, it swallows me alive. I keep having the same dream where you're talking to me. Wish it wasn't only when I'm asleep. Edge. I know your memory will regret, but what if I wanted it to stay? What if I wanted it to stay? What if I wanted it to stay? My heart is always leaking, there's a hole in inside. Why is it never enough and too much at the same time? So I'll hold my grip too tight, squeeze the happiness out of my life. Count the seconds as I just watch it all go by. I keep having the same dream where you sit close to me. Wish it wasn't only when I'm asleep.
Fantastic. He's constantly putting out new music, Emma.
I know, and I just was going to say, I absolutely love the fullness of that orchestration. Like, it sounded like there was just so many parts in behind it. I loved it.
Now, our wonderful friends at
Play Fight Productions.
Thank you. Have produced another show, Merely Beloved. We've chatted before on this show, and we're delighted to welcome Flo.
Flo's actually from me, my mother, and Susie Cato. We were going to have both
unfortunately,
Shosh is unwell. So we're just speaking with Flo this evening. Good evening.
Hi, Flo. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We are good. Sorry, I'm talking to, we were doing a double act tonight, but your friend's not too well tonight.
No. That's fine. I'm happy to talk about her show as well, which is brilliant.
Yeah, awesome. But first, let's kick it off. What are you up to in this comedy festival?
So I have my one-woman show, Me, My Mother and Susie K Show, that will be playing at the Herald Theatre as part of the comedy festival, 8th, 9th and 10th of May. And, yeah, it's a show, it's set in 1999 and it's based, the lead character is a 17-year-old girl named Rachel who really her main desire in life is to ring in the millennium on the beach with her friends. But her parents want her to spend the millennium in the apocalypse bunker that they've built in their front garden. So it's really about the tension between those two things, you know.
Where on earth did the inspiration come from?
Sorry?
Where on earth did the inspiration come from?
Well, you know, I think in the 90s it was sort of a time of, like, I think people were genuinely worried about the Y2K disaster. I mean, my family definitely was sort of, not to the same extent as Rachel's family, but I think it also was a time when, like, there was a lot of things. Like, I remember my mum had a book about E-numbers. Do you remember there were some, like, those, like, food additives?
Yeah.
Like, I think there was a time, it was a time when you couldn't just kind of look things up on the internet. So I think there was sort of, like, mistrust sort of floating around about things. And I think
People had encyclopedias.
Exactly, yeah. You really had to go out of your way to, like, find information. And I think it's about that moment in your life when you're a teenager and you sort of realise, like, my family might feel one way and I might feel really differently. And so, yeah, sort of about that. But also it's about, the Susie Cato of it all is, I used to work for Women's Day and I interviewed Susie Cato a couple of years ago. And I had kind of had this idea about, like, a 17-year-old in 1999. And I was interviewing Susie and, you know, she's just such a treasure. And I had read all these articles about her to just sort of do research for the interview. And one of the articles I read said, was talking about how all these children used to write in to when she was on You and Me and, like, write her letters asking for advice. And it was really sort of heavy things. And she had to sort of so gently, like, deal with it. And I was sort of, so that was one part of it. And then when I was interviewing her, she, was talking about how kids, she would come to her shows now and kids that, like, adults, they had watched her as a kid and they would bring their children. And I was like, yeah, you know, I used to watch you when I was a kid. And she's like, oh, I wish you told me. I would have sang to you.
Oh.
And then she sang to me. And then we both cried. And then so that was sort of the info of, like, just being this, like, she's just such a sort of, I don't know, she just was such a key figure in that sort of era for me. And I know, like, a lot of, like, millennial kids kind of feel the same way. She was sort of like Auntie Susie, and she was really, like, part of it, part of the whole growing up experience. And she came to see the show and she brought her daughter, which was really lovely, like, and they really loved it, and she's been really supportive of the show, which is so beautiful. Really
brilliant,
ideal outcome.
And Susie has her own show here on Planet FM as well, so she's part of the Planet FM family. Now, I know,
there you go.
When you were last here, we caught up and talked a little bit about your own sort of journey in comedy and in acting, but tonight being comedy festival show, when was it sort of that first moment that you went, I want to do comedy?
Well, I don't exclusively do comedy, but it's something I like, and I think the things that I am drawn towards do have comedy in them, and I think sort of all the best things do, because I think that is really how we navigate life. Like, you know, I think even at, I remember at my grandma's funeral, like, my grandma's wake, there were, like, really, like, big moments of laughter, and I think it's the light and the dark that makes things that are good counterpoints to each other. But in terms of my sort of I would say, official comedy journey. I started doing sort of comedy with a capital C, I guess, when I was in, I lived in LA for about 15 years, and I trained at the Groundlings and UCB, which are sort of the comedy schools over there. So I did a lot of improv and sketch comedy and stuff, and got really interested in like the mechanics of it when I was over there. And it's really like where, you know, you really see people that are sort of geniuses at it doing the thing, and getting to see them do all that stuff and learn from them. And so that was cool. And then, yeah, it just sort of continued. But yeah, I think my general philosophy of life is to sort of find the joy in things.
That's cool. We talked to our last guest about, you know, that difference of sort of stand-up or prepared or scripted comedy versus improv. One of our guests was heading off to do the Dice Show. Do you have a preference for yourself? Do you prefer to come in more scripted and planned, or do you love those improv moments?
I like both of them. I mean, I used to be in a musical improv team, and I really love that. They're both really cool. They're both cool for different reasons. It's fun with a prepared performance because you can really figure out like the beats and the troughs and the valleys and stuff. And improv is great because you literally never know what's going to happen, and the funniest stuff comes out of complete surprise. And there's also something nice about not having to learn any lines.
Yeah.
But it is also can be like very horrifying when it goes wrong.
So, I bet.
Yeah.
All right, tell us, where can people head to find out more and follow you, but also check out me, my mother, and Susie Cato?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram at Flobie, F-L-0-B-I-E, and then all the info for the show is there, or it's on the Comedy Fest website. Check out Merely Beloved as well.
Absolutely. We've got that up on our socials, so head there. All the best. Thank you so much for coming on once again, Flo. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All the best. Take care.
Bye.
And now we're delighted to have in our studio our next guest with the title Show of Loose. I don't know if we should be getting worried now, Emma, as the show goes on a little bit later. It's going to get a little bit loose. A big welcome to Charlotte Hanson and Jeff Rizzol. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
You are welcome. Emma is first on the board tonight. This is her first night. We've done a swapsie, so you might have missed that at the start of the show because I'm disappearing for a little while. So, hence we're pointing in directions, a bit like air traffic control in here tonight. But welcome. Great to have you both here. So tell us, what is Loose all about?
So basically we're trying to come up with a concept that encapsulated our sort of different comedy styles. I think we've got complementary but contrasting styles, and I think we're both loose but in different ways.
Yeah, I think loose was the vibe that draws it together, but as it's gone on, we've been talking about how it's funny that loose means different things for men and women.
Yes.
So a man can be quite a loose unit, right? But a woman to be loose is very different. And I think I've tripped and fallen into that trap, so that's what I'll be talking about at Loose.
How did you two first meet?
Comedy school.
Yeah, we actually went to comedy school, which is...
Whereabouts was that?
In Auckland, almost 3 years ago now. Neil Thornton runs a comedy school. We graduated together. How cute.
Yeah, we've been doing comedy together ever since.
So what made you think when you were at school together that you would work as a unit?
I didn't.
I think our class that we were with, was just, everyone there was funny. Like, it was...
That's true.
And we're just sort of the two that hung around, I think, in a lot of the ways.
Yeah, that's true. We've done a lot of projects together over the years and just enjoy working together.
Mm.
So what works when you say you've done projects together? There must be something that sticks.
What's the chemistry?
Yeah, what do you think it is that makes you work? Is it, like you said, you're a little bit opposite?
Yeah, definitely. And I also think from the behind-the-scenes thing, we're both quite disciplined and good at getting things done. So that definitely helps. Some people can be a bit flaky, so it's good to be able to have someone you can count on.
Yeah.
So how does it work working together when you're writing, for example? Like, does one of you take the lead, or is it totally equal, or how does it work?
No, we write pretty separately because it's a split bill show, so it'll be 30 minutes of one of us and 30 minutes of the other. So then if we're just working on a project like this, we'll have some sort of theme that we have to incorporate, but I don't consult him at all.
You don't. You don't come and interject each other's show. It's completely yours.
Not so far.
Not yet. That could be quite fun. That would be loose.
Yeah, the occasional heckle I think is healthy.
It's good having someone that you work with a lot though, because you can kind of count on their feedback when you do some new bits. They can be like, "That was good. Yeah, that wasn't really your style." You know, like, yeah, I think we're quite good in that way.
So we asked our two lovely comedians we had on just before, like, where does their inspiration or where does their writing come from? So is it yourselves or is it your friends or what is it that you base your comedy on?
I think we've sort of got different answers to this. I'm more sort of observational and then I try to like go to sort of an absurd place with it. So it's a lot of just staring at a blank wall and then seeing what comes out, really.
Yeah, I think because it's both of our debut time in the fest, so we're both doing a lot of introductory stuff, like who we are, where we've come from. Yeah. A lot of mine is personal and like stories about me and who I am and jokes about that. And lately I've been enjoying finding the humour in the banal, like in the boring aspects of my life. So I've got about 10 minutes of jokes about parking, if you guys want to come to the show.
Not a fan of parking.
I mean, the thing is that I will mess it up about 95% of the time. And then in the moment where it really matters when there's an audience, I'll absolutely nail it. And I think it'd be kinder to myself if I just couldn't do it at all because it keeps my hopes up that I can do it once in a blue moon.
I love it. I love it. What are you most nervous about? You just said, you know, you're new to coming into the comedy festival, I guess. Where do the nerves sit?
To be honest, selling tickets. I think we're... I'm pretty confident in the comedy we're doing. I think the show is going to be really good. Yeah, we just hope people turn up. That's what I'm nervous about.
Yeah. Because the one thing that you need for comedy is an audience, right? So the ticket sales matter for that reason, you know, for having that full theatre.
Do you think that it's easier to sell tickets when you're part of a festival or do you think that makes it harder because there's heaps to go and see and people have got to choose, whereas if you were a one-off just standalone, what do you think would be better?
We're going to find out.
Yeah, we're hoping it's a rising tides lifts all ships scenario, but yeah, I guess we'll see. I guess from our perspective as comedians, it's pretty competitive just to get in the festival, so it feels quite nice to be involved and in that scene. So yeah, it's quite a big step for us career-wise.
I love Stephen Lyon's comment at the start of the show, you know, a lot of comedians will go and support each other in this show, but does that add to the nerves knowing that there's sort of other comedians? Would you prefer to just have the strangers out in the space?
I'm really happy to have the comedians, but I also love the strangers. I worry about my friends and family coming. That's the ones that make me nervous.
So you've invited them? They know about it?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's been an interesting conversation tonight. Which ones have let family know and which haven't?
Or when they started, they didn't let people know. Yeah.
Family, interesting, because they don't laugh quite the right way sometimes. You know, like strangers who don't know you will laugh at the joke on its own premise. Whereas, like,
a bit more raw and honest, I guess.
Whereas, like, your family and friends will weigh that up against what they know about you and go, oh, he doesn't actually think that or doesn't, you know, and it can kind of not have the right effect.
Or they might have seen what you're joking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of like the second time, so it's not as funny.
Yeah.
The family member who walks out and realizing that was whole joke was about me. Gone.
Yeah.
It's amazing the amount of people that assume jokes are about them when it's not. They just... You're not that important in my life, sorry.
So take us back. What first got you into, I guess, not just comedy, but the whole art sense of this, you know, the arts world? When did it first start for you?
I've always sort of been involved in stuff. I've sort of come to stand-up a bit later, which I think has been beneficial in a lot of ways. I was doing books and writing before this, and as much as I love it, there's certain drawbacks to it. Like, you write a book and it doesn't come out for 18 months and you don't actually get to see anyone read it. Whereas this is great with stand-up. If I have an idea for a joke, I can jump on stage that night and figure out whether it's working or not. So I just love that immediacy. There's something that's really lovely about the iterative nature of stand-up, where you can come up with a joke and it's not quite right and you just keep working on it for months. You sort of live with the joke and it's part of your life. I really, really love that about stand-up.
How much of it not being right comes down to, like, grammar, like where you put the emphasis or where the comma comes, even?
So much of it is, like, unwriting stuff. Like, you come up with the idea and you're just trying to pull words out and get it down to just the absolute essence of what it is. Sometimes it can be, like, a word choice. You can have a joke that kind of works and then you just change one word and it unlocks the whole thing. It's a little bit of magic like that. That's the fun of it for me.
So probably being a writer in the past must help then with from that point of view, or does it make it harder because you overanalyze?
It's good and bad because I feel like I have the writer's toolkit, but then sometimes I'll try and write myself out of situations. And I think for the last year or so, the real growth's come for me from being present on stage and like maybe shedding some of that writerly stuff and sort of reacting in the moment and trying to be a bit rawer and a bit more, yeah.
I love that. Present on stage. Mm. How much does the audience's reaction or interaction play a part in that?
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive.
How do you fight that, I guess, if you've got a quiet audience? I mean, you're quite good. Your shows are at 9:30, so they've warmed up. They've had a night. They've probably had a wine or two. I think some of these ones are 6 o'clock. I'm like, I know what I'm like at 6 o'clock. Yeah. I'm not ready for comedy. How much does that play in sort of keeping you present on stage?
I think as you sort of add things to your skill set, you get to a point where you don't try and fight the audience. You kind of see what they're into, what they're up for, and you try and work with them and create something in that moment that's a one-off. So it is really relying on the audience and what they give you and figuring out what you can do and how you can play with them.
Do you have to have more material than the set so that you can go one way or another depending on your audience?
Yeah, that's once you've been doing it for a little while, you do start to have that extra material. And I've tried to write opens where it's got sort of different types of humour. And if I get a laugh, oh, they like the absurd stuff, oh, this crowd's a bit dirty or whatever, then I know to try and go down that path.
Yep.
But, yeah, the audience is key. It really is.
Yeah.
And what about for you? Where did it start for you in your arts journey? Was it always stand-up?
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, other than sort of like musicals in high school, it has just been stand-up. And in the end, it was just some very fabulously placed Facebook marketing to go to that comedy school. But it's been a bucket list item forever. And I think I remember being a child and I lived in a house where my parents were very strict on swearing and grammar. And they used to dock our pocket money if we swore or used incorrect grammar.
Brilliant.
And one day I heard them listening, like I could hear from the living room as I was walking towards it, they were listening to Billy Connolly, effing and blinding.
I hope you got the jar out.
Oh, my goodness. My parents were loving it. They were laughing so much, and I didn't understand why this man was allowed to swear and I wasn't. And I think that's to this day, I'm just looking for permission to swear, I think.
So who's been an like you've just said Billy Connolly, but who else has been an influence maybe for you as a comedian?
I actually went last night to Eliza Schlesinger, who definitely has been in terms of big international acts. And Hannah Gadsby as well has been a big influence for me. I'm Australian and Tasmanian, so I feel a bit of an affinity with her. What about you, Jeff? Who are your idols?
It sort of changes a lot, I think. Billy Connolly growing up, like I'm not at all like Billy Connolly, but he was very revered in my household. So just the idea that someone could do that was always quite influential. Jim Gaffigan, Nate Bargatze, some of those American sort of club comedians.
Where did you grow up?
Pukekohe.
Pukekohe, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a bit of an Aussie accent in there. I thought we were both heading to Aussie then. No.
Okay. No, we're like both Bogans in different ways.
Yeah.
Part of the looseness.
Pukekohe in Tasmania.
Yeah, there's definitely a similarity there. I think so.
Improv or stand-up? You know, we've talked a bit tonight because our guests have ended up with some improv stuff. Where do you sit and what you enjoy most?
All passionately, exclusively stand-up.
Okay,
I could not do improv. You could not pay me to do improv.
Improv's quite, I find it intimidating, like from the outside. It seems a little bit like Scientology, like people, when they're into it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would love to learn the skills. I've looked into it a number of times because it's petrifying.
Yeah.
But you have to sign up for like a 3-month cult membership, right? You can't dip a toe.
No.
For Scientology or improv?
Both.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting tonight because we have had runs of guests that just love and embrace improv.
Yeah.
I've done improv, as you know, for years and years and years, but it still scares the bejesus out of me. Because one, is it going to be funny? Two, is the person that I'm playing with going to say yes and? Or are they actually going to put the wall up and totally stop everything, you know? So I do think that it can be very intimidating, but it's one of those things if you do it all the time and you're with the right people, I think that's what's so great going back. Gosh, we're rubbing Steve Lyons' little mantle a lot today, aren't we? Because, you know, he's so welcoming and helps and he's so embracing of other people. So, you know, he's the right person to kind of pull the older comedians into it. But the other question we've asked tonight of the others, being on Taskmaster, where does that sit on your bucket list?
Oh, I'd love it. That'd be number one, I think.
Or yeah. 7 days, any of those kind of ones, isn't it?
Taskmaster, definitely, I think. I'd probably lose my mind, but yeah, I'd love it.
Do you sit at home and watch it and go, I could do that? Like, yeah. I could do that task. Or do you think what you would do with that task? How would you do it?
My wife has said to me that if I'm on the show, we might get divorced. Just
really?
Because she's like, you would do the dumbest thing. And I couldn't sit there and watch you just be a moron on TV for work. Because just the way I look at things, I would come at it completely at the wrong angle. You know, there's this task where they do it and they're like, what have I done? That would be me every task. I'd be convinced there was a trick on each one. I'd turn it, be looking for clues. Like, it would be.
You wouldn't look for the obvious.
No. I think there'd be like, Jeff started the season and now he's no longer on the show. Like, they just couldn't handle it. But I love that show. It's one of my favorites.
Is it something that you would like to be on as well?
Yeah, I think I would do more of like a Have You Been Paying Attention? Or
yes.
Yeah. Or even I would do Guymon's Spelling Bee. I can totally spell.
What about Thank God You're Here? That's my favourite.
But you see, Thank God You're Here is much more improv. Yeah. So that is quite
improv,
different.
But with a very supportive team around you.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. All right, we better take a music break and then we'll get back to talking more about the show Loose. Emma, what have we got up next?
So we have got Lion Rezzers, You Are a Feat, Lion Rezzers, The Ladies of the Mist.
I'm a ride through the valley, rivers of rapid flowing through, from the place of wonder to the land of felt. Oh, what a beautiful day. And all you wear, away to the summer paradise.
So that was Kiwi artist RUA featuring Lion Res with Ladies of the Mist.
Beautiful. Good music tonight, Emma. Good music. Good Kiwi music. Back to our guests now. So talking about Loose, tell us a little bit more now about what can the audiences expect from this one? If you're doing your sales pitch now, what's going to drag them and go, oh, I must sign up?
Well, you get two comedians for the price of one for a start. It's both of us doing our absolute best material. So you're going to get like 2 half-hours of some real banger jokes.
Yeah, we reckon it's a great date night idea because we're two very different comedians. So if you don't like one of us, you'll probably like the other one. you've got at least a 50% chance, you know?
Yeah. Give you something to talk about on the car ride, huh?
You mentioned your family before and your wife talking. How much do they sort of vet or listen? Do you like, with a show like this, do you practice run with family and friends or do they hear it for the first time if they come to the show?
It depends if they come to open mics, but I do not practice comedy without a microphone in front of me.
Yeah.
Because it's so much about the environment and the audience and the room and the vibes. And so if you try and tell your jokes in the lunchroom, you just ruin them. And then they give me the ick after that and I don't want to do them anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't run my jokes past anyone, really. My wife sees a bit because she comes out to shows while I'm working on stuff. But, yeah, my family's pretty good. They just, yeah.
So describe for our listeners then, how would you describe your persona or your comedy styling? Like, are you dad jokes or are you, I mean, what did Michelle describe her as? She said that her jokes were for smart people.
I just sort of think I'm sort of like low-key observations, and I just sort of, yeah, tell stories about my life and then try and get a bit absurd with it, I think. Yeah.
So not, and when you say absurd rather than deprecating, because, you know, a lot of the time it is people making fun of themselves.
Oh, there's a little bit of that mixed in, but then that gives me license to make fun of other people, so, yeah.
I think we're a good contrast because I'm quite like flirty and fabulous and silly and a bit dirty, you know, a bit filthy and lots of like, I don't know, very girly topics, I suppose. And then Jeff can be quite like, I don't know, he's like a man from Pukekohe with, you know, can be a bit of a bogan, can be a bit awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I can be a bit of a bogan, but in more of a loose woman kind of way of being a bogan, you know, so it's quite a nice contrast.
Yeah.
And what about heckling?
Oh, please, bring it on. We welcome it.
It doesn't put you off?
No, I love it.
Do you kind of rise to it and want to feed off it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what you hope happens.
Is there a moment, though, that you've got to go, okay, enough of him because I've actually got a set to do?
You kind of have to weigh it up, I think.
Yeah.
Because you can tell sometimes people want to make the show about them, and then if you engage with them, it just gives them license.
Yeah.
I think it's just blood alcohol level,
yeah,
truly. Yeah. When people are wasted, they really want to help. Yeah. They really are trying their best to help.
It's not always done from a negative space.
No, I think it rarely is. They're just too drunk to realise that they're not funny.
I think 90% of the time you're on audiences, it's not mean. They just, we're helping out. We're having a good time, part of it. You know? Yeah.
Now, in your media release, you talk about dating whilst Tasmanian.
Oh, what a struggle that's been.
Is that a struggle here or was it a bigger struggle back in Tasmania?
Look, the struggle that I had back in Tasmania, because I was born in the UK and moved out there as a 12-year-old girl. So I grew up there. I had my immediate family, but no relatives, no cousins. So as a teen girl in Tasmania, that meant it took me ages to lose my virginity.
What part of Tasmania?
Not the part where people date their cousins. No, I'm from Launceston.
Lovely.
Yeah, it is absolutely beautiful. It was completely lost on me when I was a teenager. Yeah. I thought it was just the biggest loser place in the world. I thought it was so lame. Turns out it's stunning, but I didn't know that.
Have you been to Tasmania, Emma? It's one of the nicest parts of Australia.
We went to Tasmania for a conference.
We did. I just love that you can travel like from Hobart to Launceston to Burnie to Devonport and each place feels like you're in a different country.
That's
not doing it for the local.
Yeah, look, that's not been my experience. I think Hobart's lovely. I wouldn't bother with Burnie or Devonport, to be honest.
Would that be like saying go to Pukekohe, Waiuku, Pokeno, because they're all different countries?
I think you could just avoid all of them, to be honest. You'd probably be okay. Yeah.
I tell you what, when I was in Burnie, a local said, go out onto the beach at night and sit really, really still. and penguins will come up and nestle around you, and they did, and I've never forgotten. It was such a cool night. Wow. And all these penguins, you just absolutely do not move, and they all come up and cuddle up and go to sleep all around you. It's the most amazing thing. Yeah. And that was in Burnie, Tasmania.
I had an experience like that in Bitchino in Tasmania. So yeah, it was amazing.
There's hidden gems. I'm not sure what the hidden gem is in Pukekohe, but let us know.
Tourism
101 tonight.
The Mousetrap Cafe that do really good gluten-free food.
Here we go.
Okay. Yeah, fantastic.
That's where you're heading this week, definitely. What's next on the horizon for you after the comedy festival? Do you start writing the next show, or do you look at taking the show to other parts of New Zealand? How does it work?
We've talked about maybe taking the show to Melbourne.
Yeah.
Because they have, it seems like a wild fest. You kind of just like rock up and be a part of it, it seems. Mm. I think that after this, I kind of want to look at writing an hour. Okay. This is 30 minutes, and we've both done a few 30-minute bits and bobs here and there now, so probably ready for the next level.
An hour seems a very long time.
Yeah.
But especially if the audience aren't getting you. Like, if you get a bad night, like, an hour would be a long time to try and make people laugh that just don't want to laugh.
Yeah, maybe we do, like, an intermission at 10 minutes in and be like, so, you guys have had a taster. If it's not for you, have a lovely night.
And go home now.
Whoever's left, move to the front.
Or you write the 30-minute show in the 1 hour and you decide halfway through which path I'm going. Like, pick a path story.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think same for me. Right now, definitely want to try Aussie a bit more. I think seems like a lot of fun over there.
I think the Australian sort of night scene is just geared towards more comedy than here. I mean, we have the Comedy Club and we have COVID Theatre in Auckland, and there's some in Wellington and Christchurch, but, you know, there's limited spots where in Australia, I know when I've been there, lots of friends are like, oh, we'll go out, we'll grab dinner and we'll go and see such and such. And instead of a music or DJ, it's a comedian. I just love it. It has that better vibe.
Yeah. I must say some of the best gigs I've done in New Zealand have been throughout the Waikato.
Brilliant.
In small towns. Mm. And the village shows up.
That's cool.
I'm a legend in Te Awamutu, guys. Basically a celebrity of Te Awamutu. And we do comedy in the cinema because there's literally nowhere to do it. So we just stand at the bottom of the cinema and people love it. So some of the best gigs I've done have been small towns.
Yeah, we'd agree with that with some of the work that we've done over the country. The smaller towns always come out.
Yeah.
You mentioned your concert performance you went to last night. Remind me the name.
Eliza Schlesinger. She was fantastic.
What are your takeaways from Eliza that you think, oh, I'd love to adopt or be like or put into my show?
Yeah.
I don't mean the gags, but the style. And
yeah, the style. I think that... I'm noticing it in a lot of people is having like a narrative and pretending that you're going on a tangent. Right. She did that very, very well. And people will use it as a tool and say, oh my gosh, you're distracting me. I'm supposed to be telling you about this thing. And it sort of keeps everyone on the train of thinking, yes, we're supposed to be talking about this topic, but you've clearly intentionally planned out those tangents. I thought that was really smart and I really enjoyed that.
Nice. You both mentioned, you know, meeting at comedy school. Talk us through, you know, for someone listening tonight thinking, gee, I wouldn't mind sort of studying, how does comedy school work? Because I imagine it's really tough because you are in that forced environment of trying to be funny to peers all the time.
To be fair, he tries to make it a very safe space.
Okay.
We did
talk us through it.
Yeah. So we spent a decent amount of time just in the little studio above the Classic in the daytime, no audience, just us. And a lot of it is just practicing, like walking onto the stage and getting the microphone out of the mic stand and moving the microphone stand and speaking into the microphone and holding it without even trying to be funny.
If people are thinking about doing it, it knocks off, I don't know, maybe a year in your learning curve. All the basic skill stuff that takes you ages to learn when you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, it's so good. And Neil's lovely. Like, he's very supportive, but he also will give you a kick when you need it.
Yeah. And we did, what did we do? Maybe like a month's worth of weekend classes.
Yeah.
With some writing sessions online during the week, one-on-one. So you got a bit of one-on-one time to write, help with writing the jokes. And then I think the best bit about it was the graduation show is professionally filmed. And because that was my first time ever doing comedy, that's quite sentimental to me. I have my first ever show professionally filmed. It was really cute.
Yeah.
And that must be good for a bit of marketing going forward too, to have images or little snippets that you could chuck in.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both in the nightmare of social media at the moment. I do not like being an influencer, guys. No. I'm trying my best out here.
But Tiao Mutu's calling. Come on, they're on Instagram.
Yeah, no, social media and publicising yourself must be huge.
Yeah. I think that's more of the job than the actual comedy at this stage. Mm. Yeah.
But especially if you're going to put bums on seats,
yeah,
right?
That's about growing the name, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, like, give people a sense of why you're funny and what your jokes are going to be about and whether they're going to like you without just giving all the jokes away for free on the internet. And then why would anyone buy the ticket? Because they can just watch it all online.
Yeah, it's a real balance of what you burn and what you use as promo. It's quite hard to figure it out.
But that's an interesting thing because, you know, you sit and get your daily Facebook feeds and obviously the algorithm's working out who you're finding funny. And I realize, Ricky, I've probably had the entire Michael McIntyre set now, thanks to Facebook and YouTube.
Absolutely.
I wonder if there's anything left to see. And I guess, does that become a risk or is it that it's still selling the brand behind it?
I think at that point, you know, you're probably writing a full show, doing a full hour show on tour, and then binning all of that material and writing a brand new show. Yeah. And if that's what you're doing, then you can put that all on the internet because it's out now anyway, I guess. Yeah. Whereas
it used to be a thing you never burn today, like you cherish that material and you protected it, but now it's almost the opposite. You have to burn stuff to get people to come along, so it's changed the game a lot. That's why you see all those awful crowdwork videos, because people can put up content that's not really giving away anything.
If anyone wants to see my awful crowdwork videos, please see my social media.
Talk about your crowdwork.
Well, we're actually about to ask you how people can follow you and find out more about you. So tell us, what is your social handle?
I'm Charlotte Hanson Comedy on Facebook, Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, and I'm Jeff Russell Comedian on all the same. Yeah.
What do you think's your biggest challenge ahead in the comedy world space?
Memorizing my set in the next 2.5 weeks. Okay. I'm excited for that.
I think honestly navigating the social stuff and learning that side of the business side of it. I think we're both at a pretty good level creatively. It's just being able to get people to come out to the shows and progress on that side of it. It's pretty challenging.
And I guess that's where the socials play a part, because everyone's only got so much money. There's so many things on over the next month. And it's not just the comedy festival. There's lots of other big shows hitting town at the moment.
So you might as well get two comedians for the price of one at a show like Loose.
Why not get Loose? It's on from the 14th to the 17th of May. Head to comedyfestival.co.nz to find out all about Charlotte and Jeff and the show and all our other comedians on tonight. Thank you so much for coming out on a Sunday night studio night. We really loved having you here. And we wish you all the best. I hope you have good hecklers, not bad. That the show goes well and, you know, no Tasmanians in the audience for you. Or that you don't get stuck parallel parking getting into the venue. Where are you? Which venue are you? Q.
Yeah, Q, the cellar of Q.
Easy parking out the back. You'll be safe. Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
What's your week looking like, Emma?
Well, it's the start of term for us, of course. So it's that craziness of first week back, are the kids going to remember that they've got class this week? How many classes am I going to be sitting there with no one? And I've got a few shows to kind of throw into the mix as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we had our pack into the theatre today for Sister Act, which opens on the 8th of May. Head to trybooking.co.nz for all the details. Sister Act is taking place out at the Playhouse Theatre for 3 weeks in May. Isn't it cool, though, when you pack into a theatre, Emma, and suddenly it's just that magic that brings everyone together? You've been in a hall or in a venue, and then suddenly it's into that theatre space.
Yeah, and it's the kids just step up another level.
Absolutely. Now, if you've got something coming up over the next little while, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. We'll get you on. We've got some slots coming up. The next few weeks are pretty chocker, but then we head into June, we've got space. So flick us an email, info@kickarts.org.nz. And we need to say thank you to Dolphin Theatre for looking after us through the month of April.
We do. They've done great. And I'm actually off to Dolphin Theatre next Friday night to see their latest show, Assassins.
And last night, you and I trekked out to Harlequin Theatre to see the opening of Mary Poppins, who we interviewed last week. What a fabulous opening last night, Emma.
Oh, it was. was fantastic. It was definitely the who's who of Auckland Community Theatre in the audience as well. It was great to see so many other theatre clubs coming out and supporting, especially given that Manukau Performing Arts also had their opening of Frozen Junior. So it was a very busy weekend for community theatre here in Tamaki Makaurau.
It's a bit like the comedy scene, eh? Everybody supports each other in that space.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing. And get your tickets to Mary Poppins. It's a great show, perfect for the whole family.
Well, we're going to close with a song from Mary Poppins. It's one of my favourites. Anything Can Happen. Have a fabulous week, everyone. Drive safe. Make sure you
kick some arts.
Anything can happen if you let it. Sometimes things are difficult, but you can bet it doesn't have to be so.
Changes can be made. You can move a mountain if you use a larger spade.
Anything can happen, it's a marvel.
You can be a butterfly
or just stay lovable.
Stretch your mind beyond fantastic. Dreams are made of strong elastic.
Take some sound advice and don't forget it.
Anything can happen if you let it.
I wonder.
Anything can happen if you let it.
You won't know a challenge until you've met it.
No one does it for you.
No one but yourself. Vacillating violets get left upon the shelf. Anything can happen, just imagine. That should be my epitaph. I wear the badge in honor of this world's free thinker. Those who see beyond their blinkers.
Jelly isn't jelly till you've said it.
Anything can happen if you let it. Anything can happen if you let it. What good is a whistle
unless you wet it?
Broaden your horizons,
open different doors.
You may find a you there that you never knew was yours.
Anything can happen.
Raise the curtain. Things you thought impossible will soon seem certain.
Though at first it might sound clownish, see the world more upside downish. Turn it on its head, then pirouette it. Anything can happen if you let it.
If you reach for the stars, all you get are the stars. But we found a home, you spin. If you reach for the heavens, you get the stars.
Grab it by the collar, seize it by the scruff. and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art.